Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox Nation, it's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball withdrawal around the clock. When April comes, hey, meet me down on Yawkey Way. That's when Red Sox Nation starts to rock. I'm a member of the Red Sox Nation. It's a kind of a...
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Betts podcast covering Boston Red Sox baseball. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, the podcast can be found on SoundCloud and iTunes shortly after the conclusion of this broadcast. It can also be found on Spreaker, Player FM, and iHeartRadio. Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the New York Mets. I am Terry Cushman, and I am joined tonight by my new permanent co-host, Tyler Seely, and Jesse Friedman from the Rattle podcast covering Diamondbacks baseball is also here with us. For those of you wondering, Dave Kwiatkowski and Austin Hartsfield have parted ways with the Benny and the Betts podcast, and more info on that could be found on my Twitter account, which is at CushmanMLB, if you haven't been there. But there's a statement on there in regards to that, and I certainly wish them well, but the show must go on, and Tyler Seely has been on the show, I'm going to guess, what is it, Tyler? Probably about 16 to 18 times in all.
Yeah, something like that between, you know, this time last year and now. So I do appreciate you guys, you know, or especially you having me on here, and, you know, I look forward to, you know, what it's going to be like come the postseason and, you know, the rest of the regular season.
Absolutely, and we're glad to have you on full time. And Jesse, welcome back. You've been on, I think, at least a couple of times, but why don't you get the audience acquainted with you a little more?
Yeah, it's probably. Sometimes I wonder if Red Sox fans have even heard of the Arizona Diamondbacks. You know, we're way out far west, not exactly the most relevant headliner baseball team in the league. But yes, Terry, I always appreciate the invite, always appreciate being on your show. Unfortunately, the Diamondbacks have faded a little bit down the stretch. But your message to come on today was, I think, was just what I needed. I'm all set to jump on the Red Sox bandwagon as we head here into the playoffs. You know, they've got the best record in baseball right now, so I'm not sure what other team I'd really want to be cheering for at this point. But yes, you can find all of my stuff over on Twitter if you follow me at Jesse N. Friedman. That's J-E-S-S-E-N, and then my last name is F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. So be sure to check it out. It's called The Rattle Podcast. If you are, for some reason, a Red Sox fan and a Diamondbacks fan at the same time, be sure to check out our show over there.
And I do listen to your show, I wouldn't say religiously, but I'd say a couple of times a month. So I guess that's probably half of your shows. And the Diamondbacks having so many Red Sox connections right now between Hazen and Lovello. You know, you guys are my favorite National League team, so it's definitely fun to listen along. And you guys do a great job, so.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's basically available everywhere, right, Jesse? I listen to it on SoundCloud, but basically every major media sharing app should have it.
Yeah, ironically, SoundCloud is now like the one platform that isn't updated anymore. We moved over to Spreaker, so that's like our main host. You can find our shows there. You can find our shows on iTunes, on Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio. Pretty much anywhere you can find a podcast, you can probably find The Rattle.
Yeah, and with my own, I find it on new platforms all the time, and I don't know if it's because iTunes sends it out or whatever. Like, that's kind of a foreign area for me anyway, but I keep finding it in all these new spots. Player FM is really cool. That's an easy app, and I don't know if yours is on there. I would imagine it is, but that's another place I've discovered mine. So let's just get into the recap real quick. I'm just going to do a quick summary, and then we'll get into, shout-outs and call-outs. Game one, Friday night, Noah Syndergaard got the start against William Cuevas, who was basically serving as an opener. And Red Sox basically were never in that game from the very get-go. Syndergaard pitched seven strong innings, only gave up three hits. Ahmed Rosario, Jay Bruce, Austin Jackson, and Jeff McNeil all had a home run party and went deep. Brian Johnson was the only real bright spot for the Red Sox. He gave up one earned run, pitched 4 2/3, but the Red Sox lost 8-0. Game two, Rick Porcello took the mound, was pitching really well till the fourth inning when he gave up a three-run shot to Brandon Nimmo. And fortunately, Brock Holt, Jackie Bradley each had two-run doubles, and bullpen held up very good. Bobby Pointer, Stephen Wright, Ryan Brazier were all perfect, didn't give up a single hit, as was Craig Kimbrell, who seems to finally be rebounding after a rough summer. Red Sox win that one 5-3. And then today in the finale, Chris Sale got the start, or served as the opener, as the Tampa Bay Rays have pioneered. And he pitched the three scheduled innings he was scheduled to, gave up one hit, only struck out one, but still looked pretty good. Jake DeGrom went seven innings, gave up three earned runs, and those were basically due in part to a sac fly by Mookie Betts and a two-run shot by Brock Holt. And then finally in the eighth inning, Benintendi hit the go-ahead run. Bullpen, not so good today. Pomeranz, two earned runs. Heath Hembree was charged to one. That was ultimately given up by Joe Kelly, and then Wright closed out the game. So 4-3 was the final. And from here, we will get into shout-outs and call-outs, and it's still a relatively new segment. What we will do here is all three of us will shout-out a player who did very well, and we'll discuss what we liked about him, and then we will do our call-outs to a player who did not do very well. So, Jesse, you're the guest. We'll lead you off in this segment. Who would you like to give your shout-out to?
I would give my shout-out to Steve Pierce, who is maybe a guy that Red Sox fans, obviously, I'm not exactly immersed in the Red Sox culture as you guys are, but I have a feeling that Steve Pierce is the kind of guy who could be very easily overlooked, just because he just doesn't have the body of work that a lot of other Red Sox players do. But you look at his numbers on the season, my goodness, .298 batting average, .387 on base percentage, .534 slugging percentage. Those are extremely good numbers. And obviously he's done it over a relatively small sample size. You take it with a grain of salt. But over this last week, in that Mets series, he was 4-for-8. He had a double and a walk. He's got an OPS up over 1,000 here in the month of September. I think Steve Pierce is one of those guys that opposing teams may kind of overlook. And I think he's one of those guys that come the playoffs could be a key player for the Red Sox. In playoff baseball, there are always key moments late in games. A lot of times these games are decided in those last few innings. Maybe it's a pinch hitter who is making the difference. And whether Steve Pierce is in the lineup from the get-go in some of those postseason games or whether he's used in that kind of situation, I think Steve Pierce brings a lot to the Red Sox, and I'm excited to see what he does in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, he's used a lot against lefties, and Mitch Moreland has been, you know, very dismal for much of the summer. He had that hot start, and I think he's hitting like 170 over the last 30 games. So Pierce has definitely provided a bit of a boost when he's called upon. And there are some other guys like Swihart has seen some time at first and everything. But as you were saying, Steve Pierce definitely makes his presence felt, you know, especially in the power department. And he's a Yankees killer too. So that, you know, could certainly help if they end up winning the wild card game. Tyler, go ahead with your shout out.
Yeah, so a lot of people would be surprised at this if I said this a year ago, that I would be shouting out Brock Holt a year later. You know, he had the vertigo problem last year. A lot of people thought his career might be in jeopardy. But, you know, this year he's got 5 home runs and 41 RBIs in 100 games. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, he's got 2 home runs in, what, the last 2 weeks, and they're both huge home runs. He's been great for the Red Sox. He's versatile. You could put him in a situation and you might feel comfortable, even with men on base, that he's going to drive them guys in. He's been great for the Red Sox, and I'm interested to see what ends up happening. You know, when they get to October, are they going to use him or are they going to use Devers? Because I think Nunez has pretty much solidified himself as the guy at third base, you know, barring injury.
Yes, and we'll get into the third base situation, but Brock Holt is definitely kind of making a case for himself to be on the roster. And his previous home run in the last series was actually a pinch hit situation.
Yep.
And then he had a similar one against Philly earlier in the year, which was with the go-ahead run. So definitely showing some value in a couple of different areas. So
that's sneaky power.
Yeah, absolutely. And my shout-out will go to a guy that I have been a critic of very often, not so much lately, but that's Jackie Bradley Jr., hitting basically 278 in the last month. He had a key RBI double. That was actually initially called a home run, and then upon replay review, he got sent back to second. But 2 runs did come in on that hit, and still playing very good defense, made some really, you know, nice highlight reel type plays throughout the summer. And nice to see, because he wasn't hitting at the major league level for the first couple of months, and it was particularly aggravating because we could have had Edwin Encarnacion for him straight up. The Dodgers tried to give us Puig for Bradley straight up. Kind of glad that didn't happen, because we're a big enough circus without Puig as it is. And but, you know, he was highly pursued throughout the offseason, and it was just frustrating to see that early slump happen. And what he's giving us typically out of the 9-hole is phenomenal. And when you have guys like Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi and JD hitting in the 3-hole, Bradley tends to be scoring a lot of runs on top of everything. So, playing very well, so glad to see it.
Yeah.
Jesse, let's get into the call-outs now, so go ahead and lead that off.
For me, my call-out has to be Drew Pomeranz. This is a guy who I think it was actually today, in the game today against the Mets. He gave up a couple of runs. Fortunately, the Red Sox were still able to come out with that win. But this guy's a mess. You know, the Red Sox went out, they made a big investment, they traded a high-end prospect to get him from the San Diego Padres, And this season, he just hasn't been able to get it together. And I know this from personal experience because, unfortunately, my fantasy team, I was a big believer in Drew Pomeranz at the beginning of this season. You know, he had a couple rough starts, but I figured he would come around. And he really never did. You're looking at a 6.17 ERA, a 176 whip. I think this is unfortunate for the Red Sox. I would be surprised. You know, maybe this is where I'd like to get your guys' input. I'd be surprised to see his name on the postseason roster, a guy with an ERA well over six. Probably not what you're looking for in October. But just given the investment that they made into Drew Pomeranz, it's really sad to see what he has become. And, you know, he's still relatively young, 29 years old. He's got some opportunity left to try to turn this thing back around. But for this season, for 2018, Drew Pomeranz has been an enormous disappointment for me.
Absolutely. He was something like, I think he was 17-6 on the year last year. Not that wins and losses matter, but still no one really saw that coming. And he had like a low to mid threes ERA and was the game two starter in the ALDS. So, you know, no one really saw that coming last year. I think he pitched kind of, you know, above his baseline, so to speak. And then this year, as you've been saying, he's just been an absolute train wreck. And he was injured throughout spring training and just didn't look good when he came back and spent some more time on the DL and just hasn't really found his rhythm. And I think his only saving grace so far is the fact that the bullpen has just been so bad the last month or so. And we haven't really identified a potential long inning guy. Maybe that ends up being Evaldi, but I mean, he's not exactly lighting the world on fire. So I think that's what's kept him around. And then the fact that, you know, the roster's expanded, that helps keep him up here as well. But every time he comes in, it's just automatically giving up a run or two and you know, just
walking guys.
Absolutely.
Don't forget that. Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely an easy target for the call-out segment. Tyler, go ahead with yours.
I'll go with the other low-hanging fruit in the person of Joe Kelly, who is I know that his numbers in some aspects are deceiving because he does come in and he does shut it down sometimes. And then the other 50% of the time he comes in, he walks a guy, he hits a guy, then there's two on, and then, you know, he gives up a hit, and that's a tying run like he did today. It's just like, how many more opportunities is this guy going to get to be the eighth inning guy or the seventh inning guy? Like, I don't know about you, but I've seen enough of Joe Kelly this season with the Red Sox. He's in the same position as Pomeranz for me. The only thing about Pomeranz is, I think he can get lefties out in a postseason matchup. So I don't think he will be on the postseason roster, but if he, you know, finds his way on the postseason roster, it'll be because he can get lefties out. You know, he'll be able to neutralize a lefty. And we don't have a lefty in the bullpen. So, I mean, unless you really believe in Robbie Scott or Bobby Pointer. So that would be the only thing about Pomeranz. But for Joe Kelly, he has nothing. I mean, I don't care how hard he throws. He doesn't throw strikes consistently enough. And then, you know, he's walking guys and he's giving up hits. It's just, I've seen enough of Joe Kelly. Honestly, I have.
Yeah, and it's crazy how some fans, you can go on Twitter right now and, you know, there'll be some people that will make a case for him to be an eighth inning guy. But really, his most optimal numbers will typically come out of situational type appearances, and specifically if he's not coming in back-to-back games, he tends to pitch okay, and that's where the numbers can kind of be deceiving. He might look better than he actually is, but definitely inconsistent and streaky. And
Terry, I was just gonna say as a fan sitting and watching the game, I shouldn't, but I feel more confident and comfortable watching Steven Wright come out of the bullpen with runners on base than I would with Joe Kelly coming out of the bullpen. And that's saying something, because Wright obviously, you know, throws a knuckleball. And, you know, you can have guys on first and second and then a pass ball and then second and third with one out. And, you know, that's a tough jam. But he still finds a way to get out of it. And right. And Joe Kelly just has no I have no confidence in him whatsoever. None.
And but unfortunately, like I was saying, because the bullpen is so bad, I think he's going to be used, unfortunately. So we got some tough teams coming up, though, starting with the Yankees next. So we'll see.
Yep.
We'll see who, you know, lands in certain roles come the ALDS. My call-out will go to Andrew Benintendi, who is 1 for his last 23. He did have a sack fly today, which allowed the go-ahead run to score and ultimately gave the Red Sox the win. But we need him to be hitting, you know, to his normal averages, you know, where he's typically a 300 hitter with really good power. And if he's slumping like that, and, you know, and I mean, we'll get into Mookie and JD here in just a minute, but if we're going to go deep in the month of October, he definitely has to be hitting better than that. And he was even the other night in a bit of frustration. This might have been at the end of the last series. Did you see him mouthing off to the Toronto shortstop? It's debatable what he said, but there was definitely some expletives in there. And, you know, just another sign that he's really frustrated at the plate. But anyway, yeah. We'll get into the basically the general Red Sox segment now. Tyler, you haven't been on in a while, at least a month or so. Just what's your general take on the Red Sox chances to go deep into October compared to the last couple of years?
I mean, I would love to sit here and tell you, well, they've won 103 games, you know, they're going to win the World Series, all is great, you know, we're going to have a parade in downtown Boston. But in order for that to happen, Chris Sale needs to be healthy, number one. And yes, he did look good yesterday, but it was only three innings. I need to see consistent pitching out of him. And then, you know, you need to see David Price pitch well in the postseason, which you just haven't seen. And until I see that, I'm going to have doubts. And until we all see that, because, you know, most fans will feel the same way. I don't care what you do with 103 wins. You go to the postseason and you get swept, then it doesn't matter. The 103 wins doesn't matter. You can win 97 games, win the division. I mean, maybe not with this division the way it is. Win 97 games and end up, you know, winning the division and end up winning the World Series. And that's better than 103 and getting swept, in my opinion, anyways. But in terms of the team, I think if they're going to win the World Series, it comes down to one thing, and that's pitching. Are they going to be able to pitch? And I'm not talking just about the bullpen, because a lot of people are like, well, the bullpen did them in last year. No, not really. The bullpen really didn't do them in at all last year. It was the starting pitching. I mean, think about it. Before they could even blink their eyes, they were down 3-0 down in Houston in game one. And the same thing happened in game two. And so before they could even blink their eyes, they're down 2-0 coming back home. You can't get down in a hole like that in a 5-game series and think you're going to win. For me to sit here and say I think it's different, the only reason I would say it's different is because JD Martinez is in the lineup and he's a big force. But I mean, the offense wasn't even really the problem last year. It was the starting pitching. And if that doesn't change, we have zero chance in October. Do you agree or do you disagree?
Yeah, and I mean, the bullpen to me is a bigger concern, because, and part of that is we don't know what Alex Cora is thinking yet. We don't know what he plans to do. And you're saying earlier before the show, some of these games are just unwatchable because
they are.
Drew Pomeranz is coming into the game just simply because we have the luxury of putting Drew Pomeranz into the game. We're not really seeing now what we're going to be seeing in a couple of weeks. And we don't really know what to expect. And then getting to the rotation, I'm not saying I'm not concerned, because I am. You know, David Price has not won a game, and he had that July 1st start in Yankee Stadium against Severino, which is exactly what's going to happen in game two of this next series. Same backdrop. And but he really turned it around after that. And then the Phillies came to town, and I'm like, all right, let's see what he can do against a competitive lineup here. And then he shut him down. And then he played the Indians, who lit him up in that ALDS start the season before last. And I'm like, okay, let's see what he does against a lineup that can mash. And he shuts them down. So this is another step on Wednesday to where my confidence level may rise a little bit if Price can go into Yankee Stadium, where he has like an 8+ something ERA. And if he looks good, then we'll see, you know. And he's pitching with a bit of a chip on his shoulder, which he hasn't really done at any point in his career. So we'll see if that translates to anything. I'm a David Price hater. I would love nothing more than for him to opt out, even if we do win the World Series. And, you know, people are going to roll their eyes because they're going to be like, oh, Terry, you're such a hater. And I can't stand the guy, but we'll see. And we don't know, you know, how healthy Sale is. I mean, it's certainly trending the right way, as you said. Only one strikeout today. I would have liked to have seen him punch out a couple more, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But here's the other thing. We know that Porcello and Erod are going to be the Game 3 and 4 starters. Do you throw Porcello into Game 3 automatically because he's a righty? And you're going to have two lefties before him? And then Erod after him? Or is Erod simply the better of those two and he's going to go Game 3 no matter what?
No, I would go Porcello. I think that would be my thing, because it all depends on what the series is, you know, because if it's 1-1 coming back, or you know, going to Yankee Stadium, let's say, and Porcello goes in there and he pitches well, I mean, I think the righty means everything, because, you know, then you break up. You don't want to throw three lefties at any point in time, I don't think, anyways, unless you got three Kershaws going, or, you know, three Chris Sales going at the same time, which you obviously don't. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's important to switch it up. I'm a little old school in that regards, but that's just my thoughts.
Well, I guess if we're 1-1, or just by the grace of God up 2-0, you know, by the time Game 3 rolls around, then, you know, it Porcello in that start looks good. But I'm typically used to being down 0-2 at that point. And, you know, I think you just got to go. You got to ride the hotter hand in Game 3. So, but, you know, there's so many dominoes have to fall before you get to that point. Jesse, from the outside looking in, what's your take on the Red Sox, and how do you think they stack up with the other potential playoff teams in the American League?
I think, unfortunately, for the Red Sox, the postseason is a completely different beast from the regular season. This is something we've seen over and over and over again in the past. Teams who are, you know, built to win in the regular season, but come the playoffs, it's kind of a different picture. And unfortunately, as much as I would love to come on your show and you know, sing from the rooftops that the Red Sox are my favorites to win the World Series, I think the Houston Astros are the team that, yep, in this American League is built for the playoffs. And maybe that's just because, you know, they won it last year. We've seen it before. We know they can do it. But I just have a lot more faith in the Astros, especially when it comes to their rotation. You look at Justin Verlander, one of the greatest game time, all time, you know, big moment type pitchers that you want in those big games. He's going to be probably the number one for the Astros. You've got Garrett Cole, who has come on and had a phenomenal season. You've got Charlie Morton, who has also been great once again for the Astros. You've got Dallas Keuchel, who as a number four starter is pretty dang good. The Red Sox, I think they really have about an equal amount of talent. I don't think there's, you know, an enormous split when it comes to talent. But the problem is I don't trust David Price in the playoffs. And I think there's a long storied history there that I'm sure all of you guys or both of you guys are aware of. This is a guy who has struggled on the big stage in his career. And behind him, you've got Rick Porcello, who I think is a solid pitcher. But I would probably favor Charlie Morton maybe slightly in that matchup. I think that would be pretty close if those guys were to meet in a game three. But I also think that Eduardo Rodriguez is a bit of a – he's a little bit far-fetched just because he's a young guy. He's more of a five-inning type pitcher at this point in his career, although he has been very, very good this season. So I think the Red Sox have the pieces. I wouldn't be surprised if they won the World Series. They've won 103 games with you know 2 weeks to go in the season for a reason. This is a really good baseball team. They've got a fiery offense. JD Martinez, Mookie Betts. You know, it's one of the best offenses I think baseball has seen in a long time. They're at 799 runs scored this season, which is a really impressive number. I don't think any team in baseball is really even close to that at this point. But on the whole, like I've said, I have my concerns about the Red Sox come the playoffs, and hopefully they can prove me wrong.
As we're all hoping as well, and you mentioned Houston, and really they are the most complete team in Major League Baseball all the way through. They made some nice trades to bolster their bullpen, which was really underrated in the first half of the season. They were a top three or four bullpen before acquiring Ryan Pressly and Roberto Ozuna, and both of those guys have just been absolutely lights out, last I checked anyway, and then their lineup's healthy again. They've got Correa back, Altuve back. Bregman has just been an absolute monster all year, and guys like Marwin Gonzalez, you know, have been stepping up, and Yuli Gurriel, and then obviously the Indians have a great rotation. I meant to check to see what the status of Trevor Bauer was. I think he still is slated to pitch a bullpen this week. But assuming he's healthy, I mean, you got Kluber, Bauer. Clevinger has quietly put together a really good year. And then Carrasco has been, he's up to 16, 17 wins in ERA in the mid threes. The Red Sox are his boogeyman, but aside from them, that's a great rotation. And you know, back to Houston, Cole, Verlander, Keuchel, Morton, and just absolutely phenomenal. And I didn't check the status of McCullers actually, but I think he is expected to be back to potentially be a long reliever in October. So, Tyler, what do you think outside of the Red Sox? I mean, who are you most afraid of right now?
I honestly, and this might just sound, you know, cliche, but a lot of people are like, well, the Yankees and, you know, the Indians. The Indians are the team that scare me the most. I hate to say, because I have not literally, but you know, I always think back to that series that we met them in 2016 in that ALDS when they swept us. That's the team that scares me. I know Miller hasn't been the same guy this year, but that guy scares me. And then that lineup, now they got Donaldson in that lineup, plus that they got you know, a great bullpen. It's just, and I know their numbers aren't great, but they got some guys in that bullpen, and when the lights turn bright, that team just, for some reason, has our number. And I hope when it gets to October, and if we have to meet them, that matchup would go in our favor. But that team scares me, and so are the Oakland A's, by the way.
Yeah, and we'll actually get into the wild card situation in a second here, but you know, you mentioned the Indians, and they're going to face the Astros. So if they were to beat the Astros, then clearly they're going to be scary, you know, by the time we potentially meet with them in the ALCS. And Terry Francona, one of the greatest postseason managers ever, and I would say definitely the best of our era. And
yep,
I just this is what I've been thinking the last week. We were down 3-0 against the Yankees in the ALCS. We make history, come back, win 4 straight. Nobody's ever done it. Similar situation in 07. We're down 3-1 against the Indians, come back, win 3 straight. And here we are with this current crop. This is going to be the third straight ALDS. And we've only won one game. Like, we can't even win a series, let alone make an epic comeback to win a series, you know. So it's just going to be really interesting to see how Alex Cora kind of maneuvers this team through a lot of those games. And then I guess, you know, we've already said, you know, the Astros and the Indians will be on the other side of the bracket. So that leaves Oakland and New York, you know, and we'll face the winner of them. What do you expect out of that matchup, Jesse, in the wild card game?
I think that matchup is going to be extremely thrilling. I am always a fan of the underdog when it comes to baseball, and I think if the Oakland A's can go into, I mean, you know, heck, we don't even know where that game's going to be played yet. These teams are really, really close. Right now, the A's are only a game and a half behind the Yankees in that wild card race. But if they could go in there, if they could, you know, go into Yankee Stadium, or if the Yankees come into their place in the Coliseum, I think it would be an unbelievable spectacle of baseball to see the Oakland A's come out on top. This is a team that very few people had any expectations for, me included, if I'm being perfectly honest. I did not see the Oakland A's as a team that could go 30 games over 500, which is exactly what they've done so far. Just absolutely unbelievable. Matt Chapman, I think, is going to be a superstar. He already is probably in the MVP conversation, just based on his defense and what he brings to the game offensively as well. Just up and down that roster, that Oakland A's team is a sneaky good baseball team. And I'm sure that, you know, for you guys out there in Boston, I don't think anyone would be sad to see the Oakland A's come out on top in that series. And I think in some ways it would be bad for baseball because, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox, it's an iconic matchup. Everyone wants to see that in the first round of the playoffs. But at the same time, I think it'd be really good for baseball because it'd be the restoration of this idea that any team in this game can succeed, whether you're a big market team, whether you're a small market team, whether you have any expectations placed on you at all. The A's are that kind of Cinderella story this season, and to see them, you know, go into Yankee Stadium or take that game at home, I think would be huge. It's going to be a stretch. I don't think the A's really have any starting pitcher who matches up favorably in that wild card game. They're going to have to get lucky in some sense. But baseball is a game where things like that happen. And I think it would be, at least for me, I think it would be incredible to see that that happen in that wild card game.
So who would you favor right now, like if it started tomorrow? And who do you start? Who are your pitching? Who are your starting pitchers while we're at it?
For the Oakland A's?
Yeah, and the Yankees. Like if it started tomorrow, how do you see it play out?
I think that's a difficult question. if you're the A's, you've had some kind of random luck with several different starting pitchers. It's really interesting. I'm looking at their pitching statistics right now, and they only have one starter who is qualified. They only have one guy this season who has pitched enough innings to qualify for the ERA title, and that man is Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea has a 3.59 ERA in 27 starts. He's been very consistent, but the A's have gotten some very random contributions, if we're being honest. Trevor Cahill, a guy who a lot of people thought was washed up and done several years ago, he's come out. He has a 3.77 ERA. He's been really good. Edwin Jackson is maybe the biggest one, a guy who seems to, you know, float from team to team every year, posting ugly ERA, is not really getting a whole lot of recognition. He has a 3.17 ERA for the A's this season. So they would have some options. If it were me, it'd probably be Sean Manaea, just because he is probably the steadiest presence that the A's have. On the Yankee side, I would say it's probably Luis Severino, even though he has not been good in the second half of the season. I don't know if there's really another obvious option there. So I think it'd be interesting because I don't know if the starting pitching matchup would really decide that baseball game.
Well, actually, Jesse, Manaea is actually out with a shoulder injury and not probably going to be back. That's a fairly recent development, but...
You make a good point. That came out on September 11th. My apologies. So that's they don't okay. have Sean Manaea.
Right.
So this I guess that, you know, makes me question the situation all the more. Edwin Jackson, is he your guy in the wildcard game? Is it Trevor Cahill? I just think if the A's win that game, I think a lot of people around the game of baseball would be laughing pretty hard.
Well, I think it's Mike Fiers. That's the guy I would go to. But, you know, he's pitching very well since the trade. Had a 2-something ERA last I checked, and... I think even Brett Anderson could be a viable option for that game. But what it might come down to is what's more important to them in the last 3 or 4 games, going for home field advantage or simply just getting the rotation set for that playoff game and then beyond. So it's tough to tell what Billy Bean and Bob Melvin, you know, have in mind. But, you know, they are about a game and a half out. So if the Red Sox really thump the Yankees, that could certainly help their case. So we got 6 games left against them. So, but I think Oakland's the better team for sure. And I look at the Yankees similarly as I did to when they went into the 2015 wild card game against the Astros, and that was Tanaka versus Keuchel, and Keuchel, of course, went on to win the Cy Young that year. And it's just not a Yankees team that's built for the postseason, I feel like. And I should have... The more I get into this show, the less prepared I realize I was, because I know Judge is taking swings, but I don't know.
He played.
Oh, he played?
Yeah.
So he's been activated?
Yeah, he played. There's like a famous clip on Friday night of him giving a foul ball to a girl or something.
Oh, wow. So he must not be having any ill effects from the wrist injury.
No, I think he played all weekend long.
Okay. All right. So that definitely adds
Let me look.
A different...
I'm looking at his page right now. It looks like he was activated on Friday, but they said he remains several days away from being able to hit. So I don't think he's actually taken an at-bat.
Okay.
Just in the field.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I was kind of would have been really surprised if I missed that, but I have been a little busy. I'm actually going to be going to Milwaukee on Tuesday, and I'll be at the Brewers game that night against the Reds, and then the following Monday I'll be at the Cubs game in Wrigley before I come home. So it's going to be pretty hectic for me the next several days anyway. But, yeah, so it's just tough to tell. I mean, they certainly don't look like a postseason team. And if and when Aaron Judge comes back, I mean, a wrist injury is one of the tougher ones to come back from a hitting perspective, because, you know, it's hitting a 98, 99 mile an hour fastball is pretty violent on your hands and wrist. And, you know, will the confidence be there? And will he be rusty? It's just tough to tell what kind of production he could potentially give them. And then their rotation is just so up and down. Severino, I guess, was pretty good in his last start. He got pulled after only 83 pitches. He was absolutely dealing, but a couple starts before that, not so good. Tanaka's been up and down. Jay Happ has been pretty good for them. And, Sabathia and Lance Lynn, not so much. So, I don't know. Tyler, who we just talked about how we think that matchup could go. Who do you prefer? Like, who's the best Red Sox matchup?
I mean, the A's, but I mean, I'd be lying to you if probably since 2007, maybe, I've been hoping and dreaming that there would be another Yankees Red Sox series that would ignite the rivalry like it was, you know, 15 years ago. You know, now I've gotten older and I realize that, you know, maybe the game's just not the same anymore. It's not looked at the same way. But I think if the Red Sox and the Yankees were to play in a postseason series, it would change everything. I think the hatred would be there. Maybe not like it was 15 years ago, but it would be there. And I think that that would be a great matchup for baseball. Now, if you're just talking a perspective of who do you think the Red Sox can beat? I mean, it's got to be the Oakland A's. We just went through the starters. I mean, Brett Anderson, Edwin Jackson. I know these guys have had pretty good years with the A's, but, I mean, none of those guys are Luis Severino or even Masahiro Tanaka. So, I mean, or heck, you guys are going to be like, well, Sabathia is old. But, I mean, none of those guys have the pedigree of Sabathia. And then, you know, the lineup of the Yankees is just better than the lineup of the A's. Just, I like the Yankees more than the A's, you know, if you're talking entertainment-wise.
Yeah, well, it's crazy to think that we haven't even faced them in the postseason since 2004, you know.
So. Yeah, it was 99, and then it was 2000, and then it was 2003 and 2004, and ever since then we haven't played. It's crazy. We've had chances to play. I think it was last year, if we would have won and they would have won, we would have played each other. And then I think there was 07 where we beat Cleveland, and or no, was that the American League Championship Series? Anyways, I mean, there's been a few chances that we've had to play them, and it just hasn't lined up. I think this year is a year that it could line up. I kind of hope it would be pretty awesome to see the Sox and the Yankees again.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we have a better chance to beat the Yankees, to be honest with you. The one thing we haven't discussed yet about Oakland is their bullpen is scary good. You know, Blake Treinen, one of the best closers in baseball this year. They just got Juris Familia from the Mets. He's pitched fairly well for them. They kind of got Sean Kelly in a very odd situation where he was simply DFA'd because he spiked his glove on the mound after giving up a home run. And, you know, the organization thought that that was a bad look. But that organization, the Washington Nationals, is a complete dumpster fire as far as I'm concerned. And, but anyway, Oakland reaped the rewards and was able to acquire him. They have Fernando Rodney, who the Red Sox kind of have his number, but
everyone has his number.
Well, he pitched well for you guys, I thought, but he can definitely lose his mind at times and not pitch well.
Right.
But yeah, but it's still a good bullpen, and our offense, the Red Sox offense, can fall asleep at times, and I just feel like if we don't have a lead by the end of the sixth inning, we're probably not going to be getting it against a team like Oakland, and that's scary to me. And if Severino's off and Hap is just, you know, average, I don't know that that's a much better rotation the way they are trending, you know, than what Oakland's putting out there. And Oakland did beat us 4 out of 6 in the season series before they had a chance to make any upgrades as well. So,
Terry, I will ask you one question, though. I mean, if it's three pitchers, let's just say Brett Anderson, or two pitchers just for the sake of the argument, would you rather see Tanaka and Severino, or would you rather see Brett Anderson and Edwin Jackson?
Well, I think Fiers would pitch the
more Fiers.
He would pitch the wild card game. That's what I'm boldly going to assume. So, it's so tough. I mean, we've lit up Severino, and he shut us down in that July start. And I haven't watched Edwin Jackson, admittedly, but it's. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to put one team ahead of the other based on the way they're trending. If they're if both teams are performing to their fullest potential, the Yankees are way scarier, but
right,
they're just not that team right now. And I don't know that Aaron Boone is really the guy calling the shots or if he's taking orders from upstairs. It's just hard to tell. The Yankees should win that game, but I don't know. I don't. And we have the monkey on our back from the last two postseasons. So, I mean, look at the Cleveland series from a couple of years ago. They didn't have Carrasco. They lost someone else in their rotation. Basically, their starting rotation was Kluber, Bauer, who wasn't very good at the time. He hadn't really broken out. He had like a ERA near 5 on the year. And then Clevinger was basically a spot starter type guy. And we thought, oh, we got this. You know, this is going to be easy series. They didn't have Brantley all year. And we got swept. So, we just need to play well. And I guess the thing that I keep coming back to in my mind is we do have 6 games left against this Yankees team who is going to put their best foot forward every game because they want that wild card game played in Yankee Stadium. So they're going to be trotting out their best guys, and we might be getting Drew Pomeranz or whatever because Alex Cora feels like it. And, so it's tough to tell, but, you know, if we still manage to thump the Yankees here, I think Oakland could still be the scarier team for sure. Let's get over just to a couple of Red Sox things before we move into MLB-wide. Should Chris Sale win the Cy Young, you know, with pitching so few innings here in the second half, regardless of...
Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
I think Blake Snell's the guy, and if not Snell, then I would go Kluber, Verlander. I mean, you can't... I saw your argument. Like, you can't say that Sales put all the effort... I mean, it's not his fault that he got hurt. But, I mean, you can't reward a guy for not being durable. I'm sorry. That's just not the way it works. You know, I mean, Kluber and Verlander, both of those guys are horses. I mean, you saw Verlander's stat 7 years in a row with 200 innings or something ridiculous like that. It's like, that guy's a freaking horse and, you know, probably the biggest horse of my time anyways, now. And then, you know, Kluber, and like, those guys are just ridiculous. And to say that just because Sale has, you know, the ERA that he has and, you know, with the amount of wins he has that he should win it, it's just ridiculous. I don't think that's the case. And I know he's pitched great when he's pitched, but the problem is he hasn't pitched in a while, and he hasn't pitched a full game since July? So, yeah, I'm sorry. That's just not the way it works. I would go with one of the other guys.
Yeah, I think he did have a 5-inning start. That was the Oakland one where he racked up the strikeouts and came out with a big lead. But, I kind of agree. But, Jesse, where do you stand on that? Like, do you think he has a solid enough case to win the Cy Young for the American League? Or like Tyler, do you prefer one of the other three candidates?
I think it's really interesting because if you go on ESPN actually has their own little Cy Young predictor and it basically just uses a bunch of their stats and combines them into a single number and then they rank based on that number. Number one on the list is Blake Snell. I think he makes a lot of sense. 19-5, 2.03 ERA. Also doesn't have, you know, an extraordinary number of innings under his belt. 28 starts, 164 innings. I believe he's probably missed a couple of starts this season that have contributed to that. What's interesting, though, is that Chris Sale is number 10 on this list. He is followed by, believe it or not, number 2 on the list is Blake Treinen. Number 3 is Edwin Diaz. I don't know how you guys feel about, throwing a closer into the Cy Young conversation. But Chris Sale is all the way down at number 10, and it probably is because he just doesn't have the body of work. And I think it's nothing against Chris Sale. You know, every pitcher gets hurt, some more than others. Maybe, you know, maybe Chris Sale is a little bit less durable. But I think that's part of winning the Cy Young Award. It's not only how well you perform, it's, you know, how often do you perform and how much do you give your team when you're out on the field. And when you consider those numbers, you know, a Corey Kluber or a Justin Verlander, I think would make probably a lot more sense than Chris Sale, even though, you know, 192 ERA, 222 strikeouts over 150 innings, just unbelievable numbers. But I have to agree that I don't think it would be his year to win the Cy Young Award.
Yeah, and it's just so ironic that he was up today against Jake DeGrom, who in all likelihood will win the National League Cy Young, who has been pretty durable throughout the year. I think he might have had a brief DL stint early in the spring, but has, after today's start, has pitched 202 innings. And so it's like two different animals out there in a way. And, you know, one guy has worked really hard all season long, and the other guy, you know, unfortunately has been injured. And, you know, it's just kind of, it was a weird matchup, you know, because so many Red Sox fans will tell you, oh, Chris Sale all day long should get it. And, you know, and that's obviously a homer take, but but yeah, I kind of like, I don't mind Snell. I think he's going to be close to about 180 innings by the end of the year, unless Kevin Cash just decides to shut certain guys down, which, you know, I wouldn't blame him at this point because they are out of it. But if he does come out around 180, that's a respectable number of innings, I feel like. And I'm a huge Justin Verlander guy. His whip is well below one, and I think opponents are batting just barely over 200 against him. And like Tyler said, is just an absolute horse. He's actually, I say it on the podcast over and over, but he's my favorite non-Red Sox pitcher or player even. Like, there is no player, you know, closer to the gods than Verlander is. And I just love his presence. I love the influence he has on everybody. And I just, I'm a huge fan, and we could have had him over Chris Sale, and I would take Verlander all day, any day, over Chris Sale a few years ago. I think the Red Sox just didn't want to take on the contract and were willing to give up the prospects for Sale, and you know, Sale could kill it in the postseason this year, and maybe I would back off of that, But Verlander did win a World Series with the Astros, and I love the guy. I really do. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting to see how that plays out. And then final Red Sox topic, and then we'll very briefly just do the pitching matchups and then get to the MLB-wide. But, Tyler, what do you make of the third base situation right now? There's no clear choice. I mean, we think it might be Nunez, but how would you like to see that play out? Who should be your everyday third baseman starting in the month of October?
I would go with Nunez. I think they will go with Nunez. I think you'll see Devers at some point in time, maybe against righties, and you could do Nunez against lefties. But I mean, there's no real, like you said, there's no real clear-cut guy. And the only thing is like, Devers has more power, but, and you know, that can play in October. But, I mean, are you going to take all the strikeouts and all the pop-ups on the first pitch and everything like that? It's like, at least Nunez is going to give you a professional, you know, at-bat. He is still aggressive, too, but, you know, at least he's going to give you a professional at-bat just about every time he comes to the plate, so. And good defense on top of it all, because that's going to be important in October.
Exactly, yeah, and that's what I go to. I mean, so many close games from the 2013 postseason, and, you know, I don't know how many times Uehara, I think he came in six or seven times with a one-run lead, and you look at the Middlebrook situation where they had that interference call, and Saltalamacchia did have a bad throw, so I'm not saying it was all on Middlebrooks, but, you know, you still want to have your best possible defender there, and Nunez kind of got a bit of a bad rap at, you know, playing second for much of the first half and kind of recovering from a serious knee injury, but has been pretty good over at third base. And I kind of get the impression that Alex Cora is a big Nunez guy. Like,
yep.
He could be, not that he's as nearly as good of a defender as Steven Drew, but it was very evident in the 2013 postseason that John Farrell was a big Steven Drew guy, and he was going to start over Bogarts. And I just feel like it's a similar situation right now with Nunez. Jesse, what's your take on the third base situation?
As an outsider, I don't see it as an obvious situation at all. I mean, I guess you guys probably don't either. You just kind of have to choose someone, and so Nunez appears to be, you know, maybe the best guy. I don't think I would settle on a guy as an everyday player. I would maybe play the matchups. I don't think any of these guys in contention for that third base slot have necessarily, you know, set themselves apart as you know, being the everyday guy.
Did I lose you, Jesse?
Really impressed me at 287. You're not going to find very many starting players on a playoff baseball team with a 287 on base percentage. That is a very low number. And he does have a little bit of power. You know, 10 home runs is not nothing. You know, now in today's day and age, that's not fantastic. I think Nunez is an asset on the base paths that could be useful maybe late in games. I guess it does look like he's slowed down a little bit, only 7 stolen bases this year compared to 24 last year. But for me, this is far from, you know, a foregone conclusion. If it's me, I would probably go with Devers. I think he has a higher ceiling. I think sometimes those young players really thrive in that big moment on that big stage. I think, you know, maybe giving Devers that opportunity would be good for his growth as a player.
It could be.
That's a good point.
You know, and my biggest thing was I was kind of harping on the fact that Devers probably should have been sent down to AAA last May or June to just kind of work on some stuff. And, you know, if all went well, maybe he only would have been down there maybe 3 or 4 weeks. But I think we're still kind of paying the price for not doing that and not, you know, managing him and guiding him as good as we probably could have. And because, I mean, when the season started, we're thinking he's going to have a monster year based on his second half last year. And he had a couple of key moments in the postseason last year as well. And it just, this year has been a profound disappointment, I think, as far as his development goes. And if he does, I guess I don't really have a problem with him starting so much these games. But, you know, if we get to the sixth or seventh inning and we're sitting on a narrow lead, or maybe we're down, you know, by a run or two, I'd rather see Holt or Nunez come in for those later innings, just to kind of prevent any of those errors from happening. So, and then another thing that's interesting to me too is Brandon Phillips is on our roster and kind of made a statement in one of his first games with the Red Sox and hit the go-ahead run. And I know he's been a career second baseman, but he's still a gold glove defender and I think would be fine at third base. And I'm just surprised that Alex Cora isn't doing his due diligence to give him a few more looks over there, you know, while he has the luxury of doing so.
It was just last season. I'm looking at Brandon Phillips' numbers right now. He had 285 last year, 13 homers, 60 RBIs. I'm with you on this, Terry. I think that's a really good idea to maybe at least give him a look. He's a veteran guy. I don't think he would be intimidated by the postseason stage at all. He's got good hands, even, you know, maybe at a position he's unfamiliar with. I think he's definitely worth a look.
Absolutely. And but it just he hasn't seemed to be you know, slotted in anywhere, even at second, you know, to give Kinsler some time off as well. And just kind of curious. And he's kind of a victim of that growing trend where a lot of these guys who are still 35, 36, 37 years old who could still hit just aren't really valued anymore. And they basically have to sign for peanuts if they want to continue to play. Joey Bats has been kind of kicked around between the Mets and the Braves. And did he get traded again? I can't remember.
He's with the Phillies now.
He is with the Phillies. So he was willing to take, you know, a minimal contract just to, you know, continue to play. But so many other players weren't. And Matt Holliday, too. I mean, why wouldn't anybody want Matt Holliday, you know, in the month of May and June, you know? And he came back and started to make an immediate impact with the Rockies. So just another one of those situations. And I think Brandon Phillips falls into that category, unfortunately. So we'll just go through the Red Sox-Yankees matchup super quick here. I had them. There they are. Game one on Tuesday. Curiously, that's a 1:05 start. Normally, you see that in the series finale. So I'm kind of curious as to why they're doing that in the series opener in the middle of the week. But Nathan Eovaldi versus Jay Happ. I think we can kind of agree that Happ should be kind of favored in that matchup. He's been pretty solid. But Tyler, what would you like to see out of Eovaldi in game one?
I mean, go more than five innings. I mean, it feels like every game that he's pitched, he's gone less than five innings, and he's gotten lit up in a few of them besides, you know, the first game. So, I mean, pitch well. I mean, give yourself an opportunity to maybe start or even make the postseason roster for pitching in the bullpen. Because if not, I mean, he's going to be another one of those guys where we gave up an asset to get a starter where we should have probably given up an asset to get a relief pitcher. And it's kind of dumbfounding here that the Red Sox are going to have to play matchups when it comes to the seventh and eighth inning. I mean, I heard Cora talking the other day. He was talking about, you know, sinker slider guys and attacking guys that, you know, that like the ball up with, you know, some sinkers and sliders. And it's like, we're the Boston Red Sox. I'm sorry, we're not the Oakland A's. We're not any of those teams where we should have to play matchups and this and that and the other thing in the seventh and the eighth inning. I mean, but if anything, we should at least have an eighth inning guy. And that puts a hell of a lot of stress on Alex Cora. And that could do us in the postseason.
It certainly could. And the one thing I'm kind of looking at here with Eovaldi is I think we're kind of sure that he is not going to be a starting pitcher in the month of October, barring, you know, something unforeseen, an injury, or, you know, if someone just kind of falls off a cliff, I guess. But he could kind of take the start and maybe make his case to be, you know, a two or three inning, you know, long guy who we haven't really identified yet. Maybe Stephen Wright becomes that guy, but he can certainly make an interesting case here if he were to pitch well. Game two, David Price against Luis Severino. I'm wondering if that's even going to be a nationally televised game. I know ESPN has done some Wednesday games, but you know, we obviously know that Price is all but locked into the rotation no matter what happens from here out. But, Jesse, do you think that maybe this can decide maybe if Severino pitches that one-game wild card?
I think it's definitely a big moment for Severino. He has had one of the most spectacular fall-offs that you've ever seen from, you know, an ace-caliber pitcher. He had a phenomenal first half of the season. Really just hasn't been the same guy since. And I don't think that what Severino did last year in the postseason is going to help his case at all either. So this is a big moment for Luis Severino. He needs to go in there He needs to prove himself. He's still only 24 years old, still a very, very young pitcher. I think a lot of people forget that. And then on the Red Sox side, I think David Price, this is another big moment for him, a guy who I think you mentioned earlier hasn't won a game super recently at all. And I actually have an interesting question to pose to you guys. From the Diamondbacks' perspective, the David Price, Zach Greinke comparisons have gone on for a little while. You know, obviously those are probably the two biggest name guys that were signed back in that offseason in 2016, a couple years back. If you guys could do it over again, would you still take David Price over Zach Greinke?
No, no. I love Zach Greinke, to be honest with you. Tyler, what are your thoughts on it? And then I'll continue.
Well, that's a really tough one. And you know, not to discredit what Zach Greinke is as a pitcher. I think he's a great pitcher. I just think that, I mean, it kind of shows you that, not that he didn't want to win, because I thought the Diamondbacks had an opportunity to win, but he had the chance to be a 1-2 with Kershaw, and he turned that down to go to Arizona. Not saying there's anything wrong with Arizona, but that's not pitching in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is nothing like pitching in Boston. And I'm not saying that David Price can pitch in Boston, but I certainly don't think Zach Greinke could pitch in Boston, just because of how quiet and not weird he is, but he's just, his personality is a little bit different than Price. But I do think they're similar. I think that if Zach Greinke were to struggle in the postseason, it would be the same exact thing. And so, I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I would take Price, honestly.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
I don't like his attitude, and you know, maybe he turns it around. Maybe he does win. I don't think he will. I think he's a raging head case. Greinke has had a very highly publicized issue with anxiety, which I guess was dealt with several years ago, but I think David Price might have the same thing, and he's just unmedicated. And you know, Greinke's more humble, more reserved, and I think the Boston fans would have, I don't know, they kind of would have stayed behind him even if he did struggle. I mean, we see that with Jackie Bradley, and I know Bradley's a position player, but just the vast majority of the fan base will never give up on Jackie Bradley, and I think the same would have been for Greinke. And, you know, he's kind of changed his game with that slider. And how many guys really pitch that well into their mid-30s anymore? And so,
not very many.
Yeah, I like him, and I would have, but admittedly, I mean, there are pros and cons to both, and in the end of the day, it's close enough that it just comes down to preference, and I like Greinke, but you know, it didn't work out that way, and you guys have no idea how bad I want David Price to opt out, and I don't care what's at stake next year. I want that guy off of my baseball team. So yeah, good question.
I mean, I agree with you. I'm not the biggest David Price supporter either, but I do, and you know, I would love for him to opt out too. But if he's gone, then what do? It's just Sale and then Porcello and. I guess you could go out and get somebody, but I mean, who's even a free agent pitcher this year?
Yeah, they would have to kind of get creative and whatnot, but the
conversation. They don't have prospects to deal.
No, they don't. And Groom is still 2 or 3 years away. And
yeah, that would put a lot of pressure on Chris Sale. A lot.
It could. I just hate David Price. I'm probably not rational at this point, but
I don't think he's going anywhere. But I'm just saying, like they've tried to replicate what they did with, and I'm not saying that Sale and Price are Schilling and Pedro. So don't think that. But they're trying to replicate that. That's what they're trying to do with this pitching staff. So, but if that happens where Price opts out, you're screwed because then you don't have that 1-2 punch. You have to, like you said, get creative, make a trade. But the problem is you don't have prospects. And then I don't really know who there is to sign. I think Jay Happ is a free agent. I mean, do you really want Jay Happ? It's not the same as Price.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's too early to really know. And you could make a signing like that and just kind of tread water till the trade deadline and then try to make a move there. They're going to have to address the bullpen. Travis Lakins and Durbin Feltman are both, you know, top-end relief prospects within the system that we could see potentially make the roster out of spring training or, you know, a month or so into the season. So, you just never know. I mean, we didn't expect to win. I'm guessing it's going to be at least 107, 108 games. I mean, we've never seen that in our lifetime. And then go back to 2013. I mean, who really saw that coming off of a last place finish? And I mean, we brought in guys like Napoli and Victorino, and I'm thinking, geez, that's it, you know? And and it just, it worked out. And the one thing, though, with David Price is maybe he's the new John Lackey, where Lackey, you know, wasn't great, you know, kind of struggled, and then he was out for a year, and then in the second to last year of his deal, he wins the World Series with us and played I mean, he was just as critical as John Lester was, that 1-0 performance against Verlander, and then I think in the World Series he even came out of the pen for an inning. And
he pitched in the clinching game.
And he did, yeah. And then he pitched game six when we won the World Series. But that one postseason kind of justified the contract and completely changed the narrative on John Lackey because nobody liked that guy. And
nobody liked that
guy. And now it's like everybody's like, oh, we love Lackey, you know, and, you know, because Red Sox fans are full of shit. But with David Price, he will have an opportunity to rapidly changed the narrative, and not that he, I mean, his ERA is like 1.5, you know, since the All-Star break, so he, I guess he kind of already has in a way, but a couple of wins in the month of October would certainly go a long way with that. And last game of the series before we transition here, Rodriguez Tanaka, not a whole lot there, just basically two guys just trying to getting dialed in for what they're hoping is a lengthy postseason. And E-Rod does, surprisingly, have very good numbers at Yankee Stadium. His ERA at Yankee Stadium is an even 3.00 in 7 starts. So that could be a fun matchup on Thursday night. Getting over to some MLB-wide stuff, Jesse, while you're on the show, I mean, that the National League West is kind of your wheelhouse. What's your take on the division right now? And the Dodgers have had really an interesting second half with the injuries and the ups and the downs, and I think they're in a tie right now with Colorado. How do you see that winding down here in the last couple weeks?
The NL West has been really interesting to follow because it's really changed a lot. The Diamondbacks have held first place up until a couple weeks ago, had basically held first place the entire season. There were a couple patches of several days where I think the Rockies took over. I think the Dodgers might have had a couple days in first place at one point. But by and large, throughout the season, the Diamondbacks were the team to beat in the NL West. They were at the top. And right now, today, according to ESPN, they're sitting at a 2.6% chance of making the playoffs because they have not played well lately. I think they've lost 15 of 21 games. They've lost 9 consecutive one-run games. Not back-to-back-to-back, but the last 9 one-run games that they have played, they have lost all of them. And that has really swung this division away from them and towards the Rockies and the Dodgers. These teams seem to be fighting it out right now. The Rockies have a half game lead The Dodgers lost earlier today. I think they played the night game against the Cardinals. They lost that game. So this is going to be really interesting down the stretch. Unfortunately, even as much of a homer as I may be to my Diamondbacks, I think this is a Rockies-Dodgers race at this point. There just isn't really enough time left on the schedule for the D-backs to make a comeback, especially their schedule from here on out is just insane. They're just finishing up a series with the Astros. They've got games against the Dodgers and the Rockies coming up, two good teams, but I don't think it's going to be enough for them to get back in this picture. So it's fascinating because you look at the run differential of these two teams. I don't know if you guys are super into looking at that statistic. It's not mentioned very often, but the Colorado Rockies this season are +1. They have outscored their opposing team all together throughout this entire season by a single run over 149 games. The Dodgers, on the other hand, in 150 games, have outscored their opposition by 146 runs. So it just goes to show you, the Dodgers have outplayed the Rockies by 30 miles this season. It's not even close. Even the Diamondbacks have a +60 run differential. I'll throw that in there. I think this is the Dodgers' division to lose. They're only a half game out. I think they're the better team. But they've had their problems this year, and anything can happen. In this NL West division, it's been a wild year. Sad to see the Diamondbacks not on top, but I think at this point it is between the Rockies and the Dodgers.
And the Diamondbacks really have to win the division, don't they? Because the Brewers have played so well, and St. Louis has really come on strong in the last couple months.
Yeah, the D-backs' path to the playoffs is about the same either way. Right now, they're 4 games out from the wild card behind the Cardinals and then 4.5 out of the division. So either way you look at it, it's a bit of a long shot for the D-backs at this point.
Okay. I guess I just didn't realize it was that close for the wild card. And it's looking like it'll be an NL West versus NL East, you know, as the 2 and 3 seeds, so they'll play each other. How do the Braves stack up against the Dodgers or the Rockies? Well, I guess you got to consider the Brewers as well. I just feel like I'm not a big Braves guy. I guess was what I was really getting at. We swept them. I don't like their bullpen. A lot of young, players that strike out a lot.
Yeah, I feel like the Braves are a good team that I think in a few years is going to be a great team, but they're really not there yet. I fully agree with you. I don't think the Braves are really the team to beat out of the National League. To be honest, it's really hard to pick a team to beat in the National League because the National League just isn't really that good this year. I think that's it really, up and down this entire league, the National League is pretty lame. I would make the argument that even the wild card teams, the Yankees and the A's, are both probably better teams than any team the National League has to offer. So at this point, from a National League perspective, a lot of people are thinking, who's going to represent us and get killed by the Red Sox or the Astros in the World Series? That's really the only question that's being asked. Maybe you could make an argument that the Cubs, given their postseason history, they've had a pretty good second half by and large. Maybe the Dodgers, if they got in there, we've seen this team perform a lot better. Specifically last year, they got all the way to the World Series. They're a team that I think has a much higher ceiling than how they've performed so far. But yeah, up and down this National League, just honestly been a down year. And it's given teams, like the Braves, like the Rockies, maybe the Cardinals or the Brewers, the chance to rise in a league that they probably shouldn't be rising in at all.
Yeah, I mean, for a while it was looking like the Cubs were kind of creating some separation, but I guess they have had some bullpen issues as well, and they haven't really had a healthy Chris Bryant all season. And
Darvish has been out too.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's done for the year.
Yeah.
Right.
The worst signing of the last free agency season was definitely Darvish. And completely fell on his face there in that game seven. I don't know why they didn't just start Alex Wood anyway, knowing that he was only going to go three innings before turning it over to Kershaw, who would pitch a few innings, and then Morrow and Jansen would probably split the last three. But definitely, and Theo Epstein is like maybe the greatest general manager, not only like in the history of sports, but maybe the history of mankind. I mean, he reversed almost 200 years of curses if you combine them. And how could he botch that? And he botched the Hayward deal because he was kind of trending down and didn't really, I didn't think, you know, 180 or whatever it was justifiable there. And the Quintana trade looks okay at times, and then other times it doesn't look good. And
right,
it just kind of some missteps there on his part, which are a bit surprising. But Tyler, like, what about the wild card race? Who are two teams that intrigue you
in the National League or the American League?
In the National League.
I'm sorry. The teams that I would say I'm most interested in seeing what happens with is probably St. Louis. I mean, I would say it's pretty much the Milwaukee, the Dodgers, and St. Louis in the wild card chase. And then, you know, you could make an argument for Colorado as well if the Dodgers end up passing them, which, you know, it's a possibility. They're only a half game back. So St. Louis is the team that kind of interests me because, you know, Matt Carpenter, like halfway through the year, had like 11 home runs. Now he's got what, 31 or 32, or is it like 34 now or something? So like the Cardinals really scare me a little bit when it comes to the National League wild card. And you know, of course, they made the manager change and everything like that. And Milwaukee too. But the only thing with Milwaukee is I don't like the pitching, but the lineup is just as good as anybody, I think.
Mm. Yeah, and they have a pretty good back end of the bullpen as well. And I like the Brewers. You know, I'm a big Mike Moustakas guy. I like his presence in the dugout, and the guy can mash. And Travis Shaw, of course, former Red Sox player, and
the mayor.
Yeah, and also the Yelich deal, you know, has really paid dividends, and it's just a really fun team to watch. So I'd love to see that. You're probably not a Rockies guy, Jesse, you know, because it's a division rival, but a Brewers, Rockies, NLCS, actually that couldn't happen, I don't think, because. Oh, no, it would happen, excuse me, because the Cubs will probably be the one seed. So, yeah, they would end up on different sides of the bracket, and you'd have, like, a beer theme in the NLCS. But, but yeah, I don't know. It's just been interesting. And you guys mentioned the Cardinals, really dismal for much of the first half. I think they were exactly a 500 team on the night they fired. Yep. Mike Matheny, and
that guy sucks, by the way. That guy sucks.
You don't like Matheny?
I never thought that guy was a good manager, ever.
And
Cardinals fans are the same way, too, because, like, I saw Cardinals fans back in, like, after they won the World Series in, what was it, 2011 or something like that? After that, like, 2 years later, they were all over Mike Matheny, like, over Twitter, and, like, you know, it's just... I never thought he was a great manager. You think he was?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, he got into the postseason with them, including, you know, into the World Series against the Red Sox, and I didn't follow the team close enough to know one way or the other, but so many ex-catchers, you know, become managers and have had success, you know, Girardi being an example of that, and Matheny, and I've never been a big Socha guy, but, you know, he's an ex-catcher who managed a team to a World Series.
I'll tell you who's another catcher that sucked as a manager is Brad Ausmus. Ask Tigers fans how bad he was.
True, yeah. I forgot about him, but, yeah. I don't think he'll be managing again ever. I'd be surprised if Matheny didn't get another gig, even if it was with like a Cincinnati Reds type team. But yeah, and Jesse, what did you think of the Mike Schilt hiring, I guess, because he's no longer just the interim manager. And the interesting thing about him is he's never played before, you know, professionally anywhere. And the closest comparison to him would probably be Freddy Gonzalez, who was the Atlanta manager for a number of years. So what did you think of that move?
Yeah, I think it's always it's interesting what teams are looking for when you are looking to hire a manager. Obviously, he was just brought in on an interim basis, so you know, not necessarily staying there long term. But different teams have different criteria, and I think especially in this day and age where you know, the analytics side of the game has become so big, I think you see teams sometimes embracing that. But experience is also something that is usually, you know, every team in baseball is looking to have a manager with some serious experience under their belt, whether it be as bench coach or, you know, as a minor league manager for an extended period of time. That is really a prime characteristic that you see teams look for, among some other things. So I think it's interesting, and it'll be interesting especially to see if he sticks.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a front office that has been very aggressive. I mean, look where they are, and they traded Pham, they traded Grichuk, they traded Piscotty, and they're probably going to make the wildcard game. I mean, it's just insane. And I'm not an expert on their farm system, but I'm going to boldly assume that they're not in the worst shape ever, and that their future could potentially be pretty bright in the central there. So
their pitching's good.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know we faced them twice in the World Series, but I don't really have a strong feeling one way or the other, you know, for or against the Cardinals. So, you know, if they do you know, go on a run here for the next few years, more power to them.
I'd never count them out ever.
Yeah. They do have a couple of front office guys in prison, though, ironically, for breaking into the Astros system there 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
AJ Preller is another guy I think that belongs in prison, but that's a conversation.
Or at least out of the game. That guy's a joke.
Yeah. I mean, his actions, I think, set the stage for Coppola, the Atlanta guy, to get banned for life last offseason for manipulating the international pool the way he did or whatever. And they lost something like 13 prospects as a penalty for it. And so I think Preller's actions were kind of a precursor for that. But I guess in closing, Jesse, why don't you just tell us a little bit more about the Diamondbacks? I mean, we kind of know that they are an extreme long shot, and from what I've read, your farm system isn't great. It's like a bottom five system at the moment. So what kind of moves do you expect Mike Hazen to make here in the offseason, you know, to kind of keep you guys competitive the next few years, you know, if that's possible?
Yeah, I think Mike Hazen has a lot of decisions ahead of him come this offseason. And it all starts with A.J. Pollock and Patrick Corbin, who are both free agents. A.J. Pollock really carried the Diamondbacks through much of the first half of the season. Then he got hurt, returned, and really hasn't been the same guy, or really even close to the same guy since. So I think he has a really interesting decision to make there, whether he wants to bring Pollock back or not. Patrick Corbin, on the other hand, has had one of the best, you know, walk years that you're ever going to see a starting pitcher have. He has been the real deal all season long, ERA right around 3. And I think it's going to be seriously difficult for the Diamondbacks to bring him back, because I don't think he's the type of guy to take a hometown discount. If he would take a hometown discount, his hometown is actually New York. He has mentioned that he would love to pitch for the New York Yankees. That actually came out at one point in a press conference. So I think that Patrick Corbin is probably as good as gone. These last couple weeks are probably going to be his last couple weeks in a Diamondbacks uniform, which is a sad thing because he's had a solid start to his career here in Arizona. But on the whole, this Diamondbacks team, it's gotten to the point where a lot of fans just aren't really engaged anymore because of they're not losing 13-2 every night and getting crushed. Although they have had a couple of those games as of late, they have had some of the most mind-numbing, gut-wrenching losses that you'll ever see a baseball team have. They were actually out here. I'm in LA now for college. And they had a four-game set out here. They won game one. And then in the next three games, they were either tied or leading going into the ninth inning of all three games, and they lost every single game 3-2. That's the brand of baseball that this team has been playing as of late. And for fans around Arizona, it has been extremely hard to watch. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people have given up on this year, and they're looking ahead to the years to come, which have a lot of questions. Like I said, Corbin and Pollock are leaving this year, most likely. Paul Goldschmidt has 1 year remaining on his contract, and the notion of maybe blowing the whole thing up, selling some pieces, trying to start over, is unfortunately not a crazy one at this point for the Diamondbacks.
And, I mean, so many teams have done that and done excellent jobs of doing it to expedite their rebuild. So that one, I wouldn't have a problem with that if I was an Arizona Diamondbacks fan. But doesn't this short window where they were competitive, does that speak to the fact that maybe your previous GM, his name escapes me, former player
Dave Stewart.
Yeah. Was he like not a very good front office executive?
Oh, I think that's the nice way of putting it.
Okay.
Dave Stewart made some of the most, can I say, boneheaded moves that I think you'll ever see a general manager make in the game of baseball. He was the guy who traded traded Dansby Swanson and Edgar Inciarte, who have turned into studs for the Atlanta Braves. Swanson still kind of a work in progress, but I think he'll get there. And he basically got Shelby Miller back. That was the entire return. And Shelby Miller made four starts this season after returning from Tommy John surgery. Lost all four games. He was horrible in every game. They basically shut him down. They're probably going to non-tender his contract at the end of the year, even though they could keep him, because he's just not worth the $5 million that he costs on an annual basis. So Dave Stewart made some big mistakes. And Mike Hazen has been a breath of fresh air. Not every move that he's made has worked out, to be honest. Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger are two guys who really slipped through the Diamondbacks' fingers. I think Mike Hazen would love to have a do-over with that move. But all in all, I think that despite the little mistakes here and there, I think Mike Hazen is a very competent general manager. I think he's very good at what he does, even though not every move is going to work out. And I expect him to be the general manager of this team for a long time.
And I hope he is, and I hope Lovello stays, as long as Hazen does. But final question, and Tyler and I know this all too well. How does it feel to get burned by Clay Buchholz at a critical time when you need him the most?
Yeah, the Diamondbacks, basically, they were down to their last game. It was the series finale against the Rockies several days ago. It was in Colorado. I think they were 3.5 games out. If they lose the game, they're 4.5 out, and if they win, they're back to 2.5 out. So an enormous game, and like you guys are obviously aware, Clay Buchholz gets hurt at pretty much the worst time you could possibly imagine. Yes, I know. He has the history of it. He has not been durable throughout his career. But at the same time, this is an absolute gem of a find from Mike Hazen. The guy pitched to an ERA of 2 over about 10 starts. One of the best midseason acquisitions that you're ever going to see a team make. The D-backs needed a guy with Taijuan Walker going out with Tommy John surgery. They found Clay Buchholz. And whether or not he's back with the team next season, I think Mike Hazen deserves a lot of credit for bringing him in and finding him. And he's just a great guy, a fun guy to watch pitch. Doesn't have, you know, electric stuff, but he clearly knows what he's doing. And as a Diamondbacks fan, he was a joy to watch in his several months here with the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, well, I think back to that 2013 season when he was like 12-0, and he became the first player in the history of Major League Baseball to go on the DL for a cuddling injury, which apparently happened when he fell asleep the wrong way with his kid in his arm. And
I hate that guy so much.
We didn't see him again until September, and because David Ross is one of the great postseason catchers of the last decade anyway, managed to nurse him through some games there and
the 5 innings he pitched in St. Louis, and then you know, he was talking how oh my God, I'm a warrior for going through those games or going through that game. I got through the lineup 3 times, and like everybody's just basically making fun of him because he threw like fucking 70 pitches or something like that.
Right.
That was like game 3 against St. Louis or something like that.
If you guys keep Buchholz, and you must know some people by now, or you at least know a guy who knows a guy who can get to the front office, tell them not to activate him until August 31st, and it might work out brilliantly, you know, if you guys are at least in wild card contention, because he might actually stay healthy. But if you start him out of spring training, he is done by July 1st, I promise you. I promise you. All right, guys, excellent show. We kind of went a little over, but that's fine. Appreciate you guys coming on, especially you, Jesse. It was a pleasure to have you. And if either Tyler or I can do anything for you in the future, feel free to reach out. And if we're available, we'll give you a good, you know, show or segment or whatever you need.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Terry.
All right. Thanks a lot, bud. All right, have a good night, and that's a wrap for episode 81. Have a good night, guys.
Everybody have a good night.
It was actually a really fun show, given the sudden developments of this weekend. So as I thank those guys, I'll just reiterate again that I did appreciate them coming on. And Wednesday's show... excuse me, I think it's Thursday. Thursday's show will most likely happen, but I'm going to have to hide somewhere in a Milwaukee hotel. I don't know what the layout there is or where I might be able to get this done, because I'm splitting a room with someone, so I don't want to keep him up, you know, throughout the night while we record this. So I'll do the best I can to... get that going, and we'll talk about the Yankees series. So have a good start to your week.
Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. Walk through the days when there's a West Coast swing, married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give anything. Still paying Red Sox debts from long ago.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.